Ready to get back to paper 16. We're on section 8, which is the top of old single column, page 194. Okay, so now it still is the case, like I've mentioned, that sections 7, 8, and 9 here are an essay on the three cosmic intuitions that they introduced in section 6. When you look at this, you know, section title, you know, you might think, huh, well, it looks like we're shifting gears here. So what's the connection? Remember how last time when we were talking about section 7, one of the key elements was the word virtue. And their use of that word virtue, which in a more literal sense, you know, you could translate as human quality, because that root is, you know, literally man. Human quality. Well, if you're going to have human quality, you need personality to be human. So they're going to take a little time here in this section to engage the basics of what it means to have personality bestowed on us. Basically, what's the nature of that? So we understand where that human quality comes from and what the basic aspects of said human quality are. Okay, so that's the point. It's very much in line, and you'll see that definitely the three cosmic intuitions are very directly engaged in this section. But up front, we're kind of stepping back and addressing that bigger question of personality in a general sense.
Section 8, Urantia Personality. The Universal Father bestows personality upon numerous orders of beings as they function on diverse levels of universe actuality. Urantia human beings are endowed with personality of the finite mortal type, functioning on the level of the ascending sons of God.
Okay, so let's notice first things. For those of us who've been around the book for a while, you know there's both first source and third source personality. And we're talking about Urantia personality, and so in between the lines, basically, they're answering a first question. You know, what kind of personality do we have? Do we have third source personality or first source personality? We have first source, the Universal Father. It bestows our personality. So we have first source personality on numerous orders of beings as they function on diverse levels of universe actuality. Notice the precision. So initially we have actualities. We have selves that are going to have personality bestowed upon them, mindful selves. We have actualities. And when that personality engages, identifies with that actuality becomes a reality. Right. You're putting pattern upon that actuality, purposing upon that actuality, so that you now can have a purposed self, a reality. Okay, and then Urantia human beings are endowed with personality of the finite mortal type functioning on the level of the ascending sons of God. Okay, you know, you've heard me point out many times that there's just two types of personality, creator and creature. Like, well, wait a minute, this is talking about, apparently, you know, when they say numerous orders, you know, they're apparently many types, they're saying. What's the deal? Okay. When I say, you know, that former about how there's just two types, creator personality and creature personality. That's from the existential vantage point of who's doing the bestowing of that personality. That purely existential God, God the Father, from that existential vantage point, there's just two types. Creator and creature personality. But experientially, okay, there's a lot of types. Because that existential fact of, say, creature personality is going to engage numerous orders of beings as they function on diverse levels of universe actuality. That existential fact doesn't directly express. We're experiential creatures, not existential creatures. So that existential potential has to actualize in and through, okay, this actuality, which has all kinds of flavors. So as we'll see in a couple paragraphs, they use the expression personality manifestation. So you have the personality per se, just existential. But then there's the personality manifestation. So sometimes in the revelation, you know, they're talking about that personality manifestation when they say personality. And so you have to take into account all the complexities of getting that existential potential expressed and all the different conduits through which that, you know, is manifesting. So there's lots of types of manifestation, as it were. Okay. But it's all stemming from, you know, one type existentially. Just creature personality. You know, just keep that in mind. When you see the word personality, you ask yourself, well, are they talking, you know, abstractly here, you know, basically existentially about the fact of personality, or are they talking experientially? You need to figure that out or you'll misinterpret what they're talking about.
So this is existentially they're talking about it
here. No. When, you know, a finite mortal type, let's just think about that. You also know, we talk a lot about how your personality has three finite, three absonite, and one absolute dimension. And we often focus on that absolute dimension, recognizing how not only can that give us an absolute relationship to the Father, but that allows us to falsely absolutize things in our minds. I mean, you know, it's a very definitive statement that it has that absolute dimension. So when they say finite mortal type, it's like, well, wait a minute, I thought it had an absolute dimension. How could it just be finite? See, I mean, yeah, you know, it's when you're talking about it existentially, it has those seven dimensions, and it's just one type, creature. But that is now going to manifest. And for instance, really, technically, that absolute dimension, the most it can manifest in a finite mortal type creature is up to the level of the total finite. So that absolute dimension manifests as a supreme dimension. That's as much as will fit through a finite conduit. But it is an absolute fact existentially. And so it's going to, when you are no longer merely finite, it's going to have a bigger conduit. You know, it can manifest on an ultimate level then. Okay? All right, so that's what they're basically saying is we can certainly talk about personality from an experiential perspective. Because we all experience personality. You know, we the authors or even us. Okay, so that's the basic thing. And now, and you'll see how they speak to that right in the first sentence in the next paragraph here.
Though we can hardly undertake to define personality, we may attempt to narrate our understanding of the known factors which go to make up the ensemble of material, mental, and spiritual energies whose interassociation constitutes the mechanism wherein and whereon and wherewith the Universal Father causes his bestowed personality to function.
All right. punctuation is very important. Okay, see, so that very first part, like I was saying, John. See, though we can hardly undertake to define personality. I mean, they can hardly undertake to talk about it existentially. They're not existential beings. You know, so all they can do is talk about how you experience the fact of personality, how you experience its manifestation through whatever self has been engaged by personality. Okay, and so when we're talking about that engagement, we can narrate our understanding of the known factors which go to make up the ensemble of material, mental, and spiritual energies. So there's that threefold actuality thing coming in there. Now, start at the very end, though. Okay, so they say we're talking about the Universal Father again, like I said. This is the Universal Father bestowing personality. Yeah. And the Universal Father causes his bestowed personality to function. Okay, so the Universal Father is going to bestow personality. Does he bestow from a top down or a bottom up? Yeah, could be more top down. So, you know, just as soon as you see that, you're thinking top down. You know, is the way I want to be interpreting this paragraph, because that's the bestowals coming from the top down. And I notice something then, if I'm really keying into that, wouldn't it be more symmetric to say material, mindful, and spiritual energies? Why did they say mental instead of mindful? You know, the more literal energy adjective. Why did they use that mental? Many times, and here it is again, I've tried to get everyone to start to recognize this. You know, when you're talking about that associative domain, there are two facts in play. There's two potentials that have been actualized. There is the literal energy of that mind. The potential for that energy is in the universal absolute reservoir. Actualize that potential for mind energy, and then you have this actual mind energy. And that, you know, if you were stressing that, you'd say mindful. But there's also mind activity. There's a potential, a reservoir of potential for this other fact. You don't just have a mind that moves, and that's what the activity is. There's a separate fact that's actualized in that mindful energy system, which they call mind activity. It comes out of that reservoir of the infinite mind. Okay. The infinite mind, when you capitalize the I and the M and say the infinite mind, that's another name for, anyone remember? The infinite mother spirit. When you're really bringing in infinite mother spirit, is the one who has the infinite mind. Okay? So you have that reservoir, mind activity. See, and that's, by saying mental, mindful, see, they're really pointing you to that. What gets, in a sense, laid on top of the mindful, the literal energy. Okay, see, so I'm coming from a top-down point of view. Now, the spiritual, in this precise way of thinking, is going to engage the mental, which, you know, has engaged the mindful, which engages the material. So it's by saying that mental, again, it's because they're stressing this top-down point of view. And, you know, keying off of that, it's like, well, okay, so, you know, there is that literal energy part. Let's kind of lump that together with the material, like paper 42, energy, M dash, mind and matter. Okay. You have this physical part, the material mindful self, just literally that material mindful energy self, this physical, you know, fact. If I use physical in sort of a more generalized sense, include that energy too. Okay. And then I have this mentality. I have a selfhood. Okay. This idea of beginning to reflect on self and selfhood, the contrast. Great opportunity to think about that here. So we have a given self, and there's a mind activity that you can think of as a little more directly the selfhood that flows through that self. And the selfhood is what's potentially ongoing. Your mortal self is going to come to an end. The selfhood will go on, threading through the next, flowing through the next self, and then the next self, and then the next self, etc. You know, you have a different self on each mansion world, for instance. Okay, that ongoing selfhood is very much tied to the mother. The personality is coming down from the top. When it engages the selfhood, not the self underneath. Okay? That's the real mother-like fact, and the father-like fact is engaging it. That's the father and the mother coming together, personality engaging selfhood. And so that's why they have the mental.
Could we say that the mother, like you were saying there, but also the added fact that it's like how you've described the Holy Spirit in times past, where it's the temple within, and it's almost, I think of it like a platform at that kind of at the top of the neck of the hourglass, you know, where it starts to, you know, you've got the spiritual forces coming down and meeting at the temple there, so to speak. So that's the selfhood too. Are you identifying that as also the selfhood?
Well, you know, the selfhood is obviously a little bit more of an abstract fact here. But, well, you know, like if you're going to think of it as this ongoing you, you know, the real core you that flows on, even though many things change. See, and it, the fact that it has that constancy of ongoingness, that's what's like the personality, that changeless personality fact. There has to be two things that are changeless alike in order for them to strike step with each other. Okay. So you have that, and you can certainly think of that as flowing through, you know, or right now just thinking about resident in the upper domain of the hourglass. My selfhood is up there. That's where the personality is directly engaging. Or if you want to think, sometimes we talk about, you know, the personality is engaging this self and personalizing it and making personalized self. And so there's not yet personalized self in the lower domain and personalized self in the upper domain, or a selfhood, same, a potentially ongoing fact because it's has personality identified with it. Okay, so that's the basic, you know, you can certainly, you know, separate them in the lower and upper domains of the hourglass like that. Okay. Yep.
So, does the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, the Eternal Mother Son, and the Infinite Spirit, so I can kind of bring it down like that. So God comes down, and the Word is from the Eternal Son, and the Eternal Son is the way the Mother is formed through the Eternal Son.
No, see, it's a little bit different than that. Got to remember, we're not directly engaging the three infinite persons. So you can't try to directly understand it with them. You've got four facts on paradise. You've got three persons and the paradise trinity. And they pair up. The Father and the Son come down and express as a creator son. The Spirit and the Mother come down and express as a creative mother spirit. So when I'm talking about the mother, you know, it's the creative mother spirits, and you know, it's your encirclement in the Holy Spirit. So it's this very localized fact that is your initial selfhood. You know, it's being upheld by the mother down at your level. The father is reaching down through all the levels of mother, down to your level of upholding and striking step with that selfhood. And you're on the level of the ascending sons of God. You're here an ascending son. And so this selfhood is going to ascend, Eventually, it ascends to the point where what's upholding that selfhood is not the creative mother spirit, but the next mother up, the reflective mother spirits, but it's still mother deity, you know, this continuous mother deity all the way up that's always upholding the selfhood. And, you know, from that perspective, the father is reaching down less and less to get to you the higher you go up. At the ends of eternity, after endless cycles of eternity, you know, you're way up there with an absolute mother, okay, and father's not reaching down anywhere near as far. But initially, you know, that mother deity is this very vertical thing, you know, that reaches all the way up, right intimate with the father as the infinite mother spirit, all the way down to you. And it's much more the infinite mother spirit than the eternal mother son. Right, it's a little confusing because the motherness in the eternal mother son is bottled up inside of a creator son. It's not spread out like the creative mother spirit. That spread out, you know, ubiquitous mother deity, that's the infinite mother spirit, and it's getting downstepped to a creative mother spirit. That's directly the mother deity that's there upholding. The eternal mother son is a trickier thing to think about, the mother deity there. So kind of just set that aside. That only comes up in really, complex situations. Basically, when you're thinking about the mother, you're thinking about this downstepped expression from the infinite mother spirit, like a creative mother spirit or a reflective mother spirit or, yeah, I mean, it's only when you have a little bit more direct intimacy with the existential that the eternal mother son comes into play. Like, they bring it up, when you're on the Isle of Paradise, and they point out, right there on the isle, you come into a relationship with the mother deity of the eternal mother son. So she's just on the isle there. Okay. Down here, it's the other expression of mother through the infant mother spirit that's really more intimate with us. Okay, now this top-down thing is you have to have that in mind very definitively, that this paragraph is top-down so that you know how to interpret wherein, whereon, and wherewith. See that interesting little sequence there. So you have these three energies, they say, this inner association. Personality is engaging and functioning through this triune system, and they're helping you to appreciate how it engages the three aspects. Okay, so personality, first thing it engages is spirit energy. It's coming down. Personality, another term we use for that is spirit pattern. Okay, it's, you know, first it's engaging that spirit. It's in that spirit, patterning it. It's in that spiritual energy, like they're saying there, patterning it, purposing it. So where that's the wherein. Okay? And that spirit, you know, engages mind. Mind is the where on. Okay? And most precisely, as they were bringing out here, we're not blurring all the mind energy and the mind activity together. Really, it's technically on the selfhood, it's on that mind activity. The where on really precisely, see, is the selfhood. Okay. And the wherewith is all the rest of it, the more literal, like in generalized sense, physical energy, mind and physical energy that it's with, and, you know, and it's through that, it's with that that it expresses itself. Now, that's the actual face that is seen. Okay. So that's the wherein, whereon, wherewith. Now, we've already spent a lot of time in this paragraph, but I want to spend a little bit more. it occurred to me it'd be a fun thing to do right here. To go to paper 101, section 2. Okay, so it's a top of old single column, page 1106. So it's 101, section 2, the end of the first paragraph. 101:2:1. End of the first paragraph there. So you have this section on the fact of religion. You're going, wow, why would we be going here? Well, you notice at the very end of that paragraph, it says that the mortal mind has this craving to know how the infinite works out his plans, his will and plans in matter, with minds, and on spirit. It's like, now wait a minute. There's in, with, and on again. I can so your first thought is, oh, I can probably just use what I learned. No. I wanted to bring this up because this is a great example of why, even after all the years that I've put into trying to get this straight and keep it straight in my head, I still have to really struggle at times to keep this all square, because this is not a religious text. It's not easy like a religious text. It's a full-on philosophic text, and it requires all the focusing that you can muster in this life to keep yourself focused enough to keep this straight in your head. So if you feel you're struggling, welcome to the club. I'm struggling all the time trying to keep my animal origin mind focused enough to actually engage this text, which is very complicated, requires very precise thinking. Not the kind of thinking that you just do, day in and day out. And so especially if I'm in a mode where I've been doing kind of real mundane material things, I engage this and I'm my eyes just glaze over, and it takes me a while to kind of get myself zeroed in again. It's like, oh, yeah. Okay, now I'm remembering how this works. So here's an example. Okay, so first of all, remember in where we are when they brought up the in, the on, and the with. It was about our personality. This thing that's this fact that's individuated from the reservoir of all will and bestowed down on us. So this individuated will, that's how we're bringing in the threefold actuality in that sense. Here, notice they even purposely used a very kind of curious wording. They bring in the infinite. Why in the world are they doing that? They're trying to get you to really step back and take a very, very high vantage point. Because if you've been reading, in here in the religion papers, especially immediately in this paragraph, you're talking about science, philosophy, and religion, in a very general sense. We're not really getting into energies and threefold energies and stuff. And then they bring in matter, mind, and spirit, and it's like, what? Okay. I'm not supposed to think so simplistically, literally, about the energies of those three. It's in individuality with associativity and on unity. It's that more general philosophic sense of that threefold that they want me to think here. And here's what, notice what they're saying. So the infinite works out his will and plans. Well, it sounds like we're talking about the Father. They said the infinite. Why did they do that? Father's not the infinite. For those of you who've worked with me on some of the total deity, one way of thinking about these various designations of deity that we have, like the infinite spirit, the infinite mind, the infinite capacity, the infinite potential, all these. One way of thinking about that is like the infinite mind is the infinite made mind.
Wasn't there an infinite I am?
Well, almost. We're just about that. The infinite one. Okay. The infinite made one. And that's part of the Father. That's what they want you to be thinking about here. It's something that unless you're an advanced student, you're not, even gonna go there. They purposely expressed the Father that way. This part of the Father is the infinite made one. Part of the Father is the infinite one. Okay? The first source and center part of the Father. Is what you're really, see, so much, by saying it that way, if you're an advanced student, you go, okay, so not so much the universal Father, like they're talking about back here and where we are. They're wanting me to drop back behind the universal Father, that real core part of the Father, the first source and center. Part of which is the infinite made one. Okay, so that, and that is literally the first source is the reservoir of all the will. So when they're talking about his will. Okay, so they're saying, so thinking about the first source and center, this is very different than my personality. You see, it's not my will, it's his will. We're talking about the will of the first source and center here. So not surprisingly, you need to interpret in, with, and on differently, because it's talking about something very different. So here, the Father is the individuality of the parts. He initiates individuals. In individuality. See, the first source and center engaging things is in individuality. Each individual. And the on unity, to really go with the full heavy duty spirit of what they're doing here, there is a sentence in paper 105, Deity and Reality, that said a curious thing. It said, infinity is filled by the infinite encompasses infinity. Remember that? It was a compound sentence with a semicolon in the middle there. And we pointed out that was their, reflecting on that is their the hint they're giving you to begin to think of splitting the concept of the I am into the unity part and the oneness part in that order. Okay. The saying the infinite encompasses infinity, that's the oneness part. Infinity is filled by the infinite. That's thinking about the unity part. An inside and an outside, encompassing, see, on the outside. The unity is, in that picture is inside. And this is on unity. See, if you're transcendent, remember, the Father is a God of transcendence. So if you're sort of, that oneness that is the Father, the infinite one, right, is transcendent of that unity. Its engagement is on that unity. And that's why the on. So it's in individuality, initiating the parts. In that transcendent sense, it's on the unity. The oneness is on the unity. And then with minds. What were we just saying? Like when I was helping Pam understand that mindal part. The mindal womb that I'm in, for instance, right now. It's a womb. That's the mother, not the father. Okay? This transcendent fact they're talking about here is with that mother part. The father part is with the mother part. Okay? And even one more little bit. When we went all the way through the total deity appendix and finally figured out exactly how to think in precision about the nature of the first source and center, now from a deity perspective, we discovered that the first source and center is the co-infinite mind. And that mother at the top level is the, what were we just saying, the infinite mind. See, that mind of the first source and center is with the infinite mind, the mother, the infinite mother spirit. He is the co-infinite mind. Co means with. With the infinite mind. That's why you call him the co-infinite mind. And that's what that's literally referring to there. At those highest levels, where you're, you know, you're barely thinking about downstep from the infinite. That's why they put the infinite in there. The infinite one and the infinite mother spirit. Yeah. The infinite mother spirit is the infinite made spirit as the infinite spirit, and the infinite made mind as the infinite mind. Together as one. Very high fact, along with this first source and center, the co-infinite mind with that mind. Okay. So, that, you know, even if you couldn't follow all of that, the point there is, there's nothing boilerplate about this book. I mean, it is an intense philosophic text. You can get one thing figured out, and you got to be very careful. Don't start thinking, oh, I can just mindlessly apply that everywhere. No, you'll probably get tripped up in short order.
What's a boilerplate?
It means it's just, cookie cutter.
A template.
Yeah. Text, you know, like legal text. It's often called boilerplate. You know, it's the fine print, you know, and it's just yada, 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 yada. Every single time it says the exact same thing, you know, and your eyes glaze over. Okay. Boilerplate. Okay. So, is it not a fact that this is just not an easy thing, like a religious text? It's not you find yourself wishing it was a religious text. So, you know, your brain didn't hurt so much trying to get it to focus in order to engage this. It is very intense stuff. You know, and, you know, here you are in the religion papers and you're wanting to kind of be, let yourself loose and flow with the spirit, you know, and they just, you know, they're not going to let you do that because that's not the point of this revelation. You know, if you're listening at all, you're going to go, the infinite, why on earth did they bring in the infinite here? And, when you finally unpack it, it's like, oh my goodness, that's just crazy intense to be mixed into, I'm still trying to figure out science, philosophy, and religion, you know? And you're bringing in the infinite one and the infinite spirit and the infinite mind and the co-infinite mind and... however... As intense as all that is, it brings us back full circle to the title of this section. We've been given a gift by the Father that allows us to actually figure out all that complexity. The ability to engage the threefold actuality and harmonize it, sort it all out, and actually unify it and get an understanding of how this all works. Now, it may take a lot of effort, but you can do it. So this gift, this Urantia personality, is an amazing thing when you start thinking about it. It's what allowed me to be able to figure that out. No fancy animal can sort that complexity out. I had to use all the personality focusing I could muster to sort that out.
You were using your father sense to just refocus every time. You had to refocus, and then it would put a new pattern on your mind. Then you'd refocus again, and so it's continually refocusing. That's exercising the will. That's the father part. That's exercising,
and you're constantly fighting against your second agent wanting to quickly rationalize something. It's like, okay, I think it's the same, you know, on and in and with, you know, and you can, if you assume it is, you can rationalize it. The trick is to have this reality response when you do that and go, that doesn't taste right. There's just something that's not right about that. I gotta try again. one of the things that I've noticed that helps me, you know, they give you little signposts, you know, take note. Notice when they do little things like not put Mindel in there. Make it so that it's not a simple, you know, level playing field of words, material, Mindel, spiritual. They switched it to mental. You know, I know that's not just because they got tired of saying Mindel. I did that for some reason. What is it? You know, the more you try to figure out why, the more you get yourself in the right orientation. It's like, oh, okay, I get it. Okay. You know, using the word infinite was what they did in that other one. You know, that I know that I'm not looking at it right unless my understanding hinges upon directly using that designation, not just brushing it aside, saying, well, I'll pretend it says the Universal Father, and then interpret it. You've got to figure out why they said the infinite. And obviously, when they do that, you know you're in for a lot of work. I mean, you know, unless you've figured out all of the total deity stuff, you can't even go there. That's really advanced stuff to be able to figure out why they stuck the infinite in at some point like that.
Yeah, but you know, the book is also for people, you know, not to have to go that deep, and they can still get a lot out of it.
Of course. But you know, it's definitely, like we're pointing out, here we are, you know, here at the end of paper 16. This is the point at which, if you're ready to go beyond that initial sort of religious affirmation that you can get from it, this is where they're trying to really get you to shift gears. Yeah.
When I'm studying this kind of stuff that you're talking, well, I'm not certainly not doing what you're doing, but what I'm finding helpful more and more is to go back to page 2 to the 7 functional levels of reality, because it really helps me. That didn't mean anything to me when I read the book for years, for decades.
Didn't mean anything to me either.
Total deity.
All right.
And now it really explains, because see, you don't get, it's not till level 3 that you get self-personalized deity. So what are levels 2 and 1?
Right. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on.
So,
right.
So, yeah. And then also what Pam said about associative level 3. And divinely fraternal deity, the Son, but then when you get to level 4, it's a creative, divinely revealed deity. That's the difference between the Son and the Spirit. Divinely fraternal deity versus, which stays on the existential side, but then it comes forth, divinely revealed deity. It comes out in the universe. Right. That's the Spirit.
Right, see, and that's what I was saying. It's much more that mother deity that, you know, really is revealed sort of more directly.
It's an existential mother deity.
Yeah, it's a little bit more bottled up.
Yeah.
And that's why you see it when it downstepped, it literally is bottled up inside of the Creator Son, that mother deity. But it pops out every once in a while, like a Creator Son by himself making both material sons and material daughters. Can't do that if he doesn't have mother nature inside of him. He could only make sons. He has to have mother nature inside of him in order to make daughters as well. So, but by and large, it's bottled up. Oh, you have one more thing?
What struck me about this sentence, wherewith the Universal Father causes his bestowed personality to function.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like, well, what about me?
Your personality is on loan from God. I mean, I hate to break this to you. But
I'm reading that, as I am speaking to his will, I'm really not exercising personality.
Yeah, it is my will that your will be done. Right, that consecration of your will to the perfect will, so that when all is said and done, it's all his will. But not in the sense of a drop of water in the ocean. You still are absolutely individuated. You're just wholeheartedly consecrated, so that you are lined up. You know, if you're going to be part of eternal purposing, you know, he delegated this, you know, he handed off this little bit of purposing to you. If that's going to go anywhere, it's got to line up with his, I guess that was the other spot, his will and plans, you know, that other spot we were reading. And again, it takes a twofold consecration to do that. You not only consecrate your will to the perfect will of God the Father, but you have this twofold, this dual system. That will doesn't exist by itself. It's identified with a selfhood. So the selfhood has to be wholeheartedly consecrated as well. You have to consecrate your mind to the universal harmony. The two Because it's a dual system fundamentally, father and mother together, there has to be a dual consecration or it's not going to work. All right, let's get a little more in here.
Personality is a unique endowment of original nature whose existence is independent of and antecedent to the bestowal of the thought adjuster. Nevertheless, the presence of the adjuster does augment the qualitative manifestation of personality. Thought adjusters, when they come forth from the Father, are identical in nature. But personality is diverse, original, and exclusive. And the manifestation of personality is further conditioned and qualified by the nature and qualities of the associated energies of a material, mental, and spiritual nature, which constitute the organismal vehicle for personality manifestation.
Okay, see, so that last part, there's that, you know, directly talking about the personality manifestation. You have this organismal vehicle. So now we're just looking down at that level of that organism and what it is. It's this threefold energy, and how do they word it? Now it's material, mindal, and spiritual. Okay. So just directly is that energy organism. It's that. Now back to the beginning of the paragraph. Okay, so personality is a unique endowment of original nature. We know there's a fact called the original. That's the universal one of infinity. And on the one side, it's important here about this bestowal of personality, it's the first center. Remember how up in the other one, we had that in individuality? You know, how can the Father be the individuality of the parts? That initiator of individuals, of parts. In the midst of all the unity, there's a centering manifestation that's coming forth there. Suddenly a center appears in the midst of the unity. See, he's the first center. He can do that because he's the first source and center. So the centering part, and then the source, the literal will that's being individuated and doled out as personality. See, it's a very first source and center phenomenon. It's of original nature. Yeah, literally. It's one of the stoles of the original. The father side of the original. And of course, there's always the mother side of the original as well. It's in play, as we've been pointing out. All that, you know, that's always in play here as well. And here's one of the points where they're stressing, don't ever forget in your delight at the revelation of the existence of thought adjusters, the fact of thought adjusters. Don't let that make you forget about personality, that other gift from the Father, which is just as profound, just as filled with mystery of mysteries as the thought adjuster. Long before there's universal bestowal of thought adjusters, there's universal bestowal of personality. That's a million years ago. And it's a profound fact, just what the personality can do, completely independent of the thought adjuster. And in terms of getting started, forget about the thought adjuster. You're not doing anything with the thought adjuster to get started. You're trying to start using this personality. You're trying to get it to manifest. You have this potential given to you by the Father. You want to do something with that potential. You want to get it through the self and get it manifesting. Get a flow going so that you're part of the Father's personality circuit. That volitional circuit, the literal flow, the exercise of will. Okay, so they're just stressing that. Of course, like we always point out, the thought adjusters can help a lot. Once you get up to speed a little bit with, using this potential that is personality, get it manifesting a little bit, the adjuster can certainly help. Like, for instance, when I'm trying to focus in a completely unconscious way, the adjuster will be catalyzing that effort. If I'm making a real earnest effort to focalize my mind, the adjuster will certainly help with that.
The adjuster is really after our personality.
Right. From the adjuster's point of view, it has a divine mind and everything already. It's not looking for your mind, but it's not personal. What was that?
Are we born with our personality?
No, that's a little bit of a, you're not born with the personality attempting to manifest, because the self has to get up to a certain point before there's even a potential conduit. You know, it's not until you're roughly 6 that you've got the full conduit built up, seventh adjutant engaging your encirclement in the Holy Spirit, so that there's a selfhood. I mean, obviously the personality can't identify until there's a selfhood for it to identify with. That's the encirclement in the Holy Spirit. But, you know, existentially, you know, what, you know, from an existential point of view, you know, of course your question is meaningless. Existentially, you're an eternal lighter, and, you know, right. I mean, so when you really think literally about what the Father is, a purely existential fact in this bestowal, you know, he's really bestowing upon an eternal self. You know, so, you know, you can think about, okay, so let's say before there was time, the Father bestowed personality on this eternal self. Then time comes into existence, and this eternal self gets stretched down by the Mother, down through the whole hierarchy of sub-absolute reality, and it has experiences, you know, at all these levels. It's not the case that the Father somehow ceased to be purely existential. I'm going to be experiential so I can stick my hand down into experiential reality and literally plop this on your head. Yeah, he can't do that. He's purely existential, purely transcendental. He can't go down in. He's the God that's on the outside. Right. But the Mother, you know, it comes down through the Mother. Remember that we've pointed that out. The literal, what's the Father's personality circuit flowing in? It's a circuit. What, you know, what's it encircuited in? What's a conductor? You know, that's the deity, Mother deity.
When someone fails to survive, what happens to their personality?
So that purposing, you know, which initially is identified with a given self and is attempting to manifest through that self goes away. So that conduit for manifestation goes away. That purposing is still part of the whole, and it literally becomes part of, you know, really kind of technically the part of God the Supreme that we call God the Almighty. That purposing becomes part of that purposing, because it is, there's some purposing there. It's God the Almighty. The purposing of that self that chooses to cease to be an outlet for said purposing, becomes part of that greater purposing of the whole.
Yeah, but I think she means something different
than that.
That's sort of what I mean, but I've often thought that this bestowing of personality is it's a little bit like God sort of shaking his head and saying, I got to get rid of some of this nastiness. You know, I'm going to bestow it all out, and some of it will live and some of it won't, and then I won't have to deal with it anymore.
Now, see, it's not like that, because he's a purely eternal, you know, changeless fact. So, and that's why it's so important to, you know, see, the word bestowal is a tricky word when you use it for personality, because it immediately starts to get you thinking, oh, I've got this object, like this cup that the Father has in his hands, and he's, you know, handing this cup down and setting it gently upon my electrochemical mechanism. No, it's not a thing in any way like that. You know, think of it as part of his ubiquitous presence of purposing. But that purposing doesn't all get expressed through one self, God the Infinite. He's broken up that purposing. It's all one purposing. The question is just, how does it manifest? And so the personality doesn't change at all. It just changes its mode of manifestation. Instead of manifesting through myself, if I choose iniquity, it's going to manifest through another self. So your question is, well, which self? Some other, you know, mortal? No. Now, all that, mortal selves, or even, you know, being like Lucifer, you know, the purposing that was manifesting through that self, you know, can't anymore, and will begin to manifest through God the Almighty.
A way to purge eternity from, to purge iniquity out of eternity.
See, again, there is no iniquity in eternity. Which is another way why you. Well, see, yeah, see, you know it's not going to get there because eternity already exists and it's not there, so it doesn't get there. So it's not like an iniquitous self can somehow make it to eternity, corrupt eternity. But the purposing is part of eternity. See, that's the thing. Really, the purposing that manifests through me is fundamentally part of eternity. It's an existential fact. It's just coming down and out from my experiential perspective. But it, you know, if you want to say, where is it? It really isn't so much here. It's in eternity and coming through here. It's a lot like, you know, when we point out, I mean, until an adjuster fuses, the mystery of mystery things is really that adjuster is not in space and time. It's like in this same place as this personality is. It's in eternity and infinity, really. And through some mysterious means, it's manifesting in time and space. It has a point presence, that adjuster, in time and space. But until there's that fusion, it doesn't actually come down into. I mean, you know, you're moving up. The adjuster, you know, initially reached us down as far as it could, and it's holding that place, waiting for you to get up. And as soon as you actually get up there and grab a hold of it, fuse it, you jerk it down into space and time. You know, and it becomes, you know, it becomes the ascending sun. That's why even personalized adjusters, even when you have a, you know, an adjuster that, you know, say the one that served Michael, you know, while he was bestowed here, and then was personalized directly by the Father. You know, they call that personalized adjuster an ascending son, because it really now has a, by giving it that personality, you've the Father has sort of forced it to have an engagement, not as definitively as when you fuse with the adjuster and literally jerk it down into space and time, but it becomes something that really has this much more intimate relationship with space and time, and it kind of has this vertical relationship to things that it didn't have before.
Would you call that an identity? But my question before you even answer that. The question of what happens to the personality that of a non-survivor, interesting question. Does this have anything whatever to do? Did the Hindus have this concept when they thought about the great, what do they call that, that they're all supposed to mesh into?
Atman.
Yeah, I mean, right, there's all those, you know, Brahman, and, you know, and there's all these various ideas.
Is that where that concept, that early Hindu concept?
Right, but like they point out when they're talking about, you know, those Eastern concepts, those philosophic concepts, there's shades of the individuations and the whole and things like that.
We know it's the universe is supreme, but did they...
Like they point out when they were getting a pretty focused idea in their minds, they were getting a sense of the supreme. Yeah. You know, that was the sort of whole, and a sense of how we have some sort of relationship to that whole. Okay, and they were getting a sense of that. There's something else I was going to say. What was it? Oh, yeah. Just really, really work hard. I'm stressing this selfhood personality. This question of where does the personality go? See, The thing you have to change there is thinking that somehow really that you are the personality and you're wondering where you go. No, you at best are the selfhood. Okay? That's you. Okay? Personality is identified with you and is manifesting through you. It really, you know, it's what Gene was pointing out. Wherewith the Universal Father causes his bestowed personality to function. It's eternal, you know, if you choose eternity, that just means that his individuation of will, his personality is eternally on loan to you. Well, see, it's always really his purposing, not yours.
That we cannot think of personality is different than what we think of in terms of, oh, is someone outgoing or is someone really crabby? Right. You know, that's not...
Temperament.
That's temperament. That's what we tend to think of as personality.
Right.
And so when I'm thinking of, you know, some really horrible person who shoots up an elementary school, what happens to that personality? What that person's personality? That's not the right question.
Right, see, right. Yeah, and now there, even in that person that, you know, chooses iniquity, like say Lucifer, not all of Lucifer's millions of years of existence was iniquity. There's lots and lots of years, ages of goodness that you know, is part of the Supreme. Remember, there's that reflective relationship. Or let's think about me. Let's say I'm gonna choose iniquity. Well, right now I'm not iniquitous. You know, I have some little measure of goodness going on. The adjuster has a very intimate relationship with that. The adjuster, you know, has all of this experiential nature that's wrapped around its existential core. If I choose iniquity, it's not like I strip that relationship off of the adjuster that the adjuster had with me. It goes on forever with that reflection of me, that goodness of me wrapped around it. And eventually that'll become part of some other mortal that adjuster gets. Yeah. Or right now, if I have a supreme adjuster, my adjuster has wrapped around it at least one iniquitous person's selfhood character, the goodness of it. That's how it got to be a supreme adjuster. It lived in a being that chose iniquity. It's the only way to become a supreme adjuster. So you have this question, where, if I choose iniquity, where does my goodness, my selfhood go? Well, it goes with the adjuster. Because there's kind of a reflective copy of it, you know, basically, in the hands of the adjuster. Even though I squish mine out of existence, I don't squish.
So your yes. Personality becomes as if it never was.
My selfhood becomes as if it never was. Right. But so we have to interpret that. You can't go, well, that's a total conflict. I mean, what do they mean by that? Remember what I said. When you see the word personality, you always interpret it exactly the same way. Is that what we've learned tonight? No. Sometimes they're talking existentially. Sometimes they're talking experientially. Like right there. That personality manifestation is as if it never was. But not literally the existential personality. You have to know how they're using the word personality. If you choose, I'm going to interpret that existentially, then you're misinterpreting it. You have to figure out which it is. It's like, well, how do I know? Well, assume it's existential and then look at the consequences of that assumption. It leads to complete conflict with the whole revelation. So, oops, that's not the correct initial assumption. That must not be what they mean. They must not be talking existentially about personality. And see, and nothing else. I mean, you know that his personality cannot be as if it never was. He is changeless. He is eternal. His purposing, that individuation of his will that was manifesting through that now iniquitous person, I mean, can't go anywhere. If it could go somewhere, if it could be as if it never was, then God doesn't exist. God, I mean, conceptually, not only would that part of God disappear, but all of God would disappear. That would mean that God is made out of sand. And he disappears. He can't disappear. His purposing can't go anywhere. If it could, he wouldn't be what he is.
So he makes this the manifestation of the personality that God thinks of. And our little selfhood takes that personality that he, I mean, we're not even there yet, but we take the little crumb of it. And if we choose his will and go all the way up, then our personality will be manifested in wherever he created us to be.
Now flip it around. You're making that's bottom up.
Yeah.
It's top down.
Okay.
You don't take the personality. The personality takes you. Okay. The personality identifies with a selfhood. God chooses you before you make any choice. God chooses you. God identifies. He takes all of the person. He has an infinite amount of things he wants to do with the cosmos infinite. And he's not going to do them all himself. Part of his ideas he's going to hand to you. There's a little bit of purposing that he's going to put in your hands. He takes that purposing and he identifies it with yourself. It's going to have hands and expression through your selfhood and self, and literally hands. Now, if it's part of his purpose to move this cup, that's how that purposing, the cosmos infinite, it comes down through my selfhood, myself, into my hands, and it moves the cup. It manifests like that. If that was a full-blown personality thing, that would be personality manifestation, like they're talking about, coming through my hands, the hands of myself. Okay. So that's what's always going on. The question is whether or not you want to be a conduit for part of his plan. Do you want some of the purposing to come through you or not? I mean, you have no choice, you have no control over whether or not that purposing is going to get expressed. Of course it's going to be expressed. Who could stop the Father from expressing his purpose? It will get expressed. He's given you the opportunity to be the means for that. That's all you have control over, whether or not that purposing is going to come through you or not. If you say no, he says, fine. There's plenty others. I mean, you're a part. You're not the whole. There are many. It's like, well, I'm just going to stop your, Lucifer thinks he's going to stop the purposing, by just, digging his heels in and saying no. It's like, no, you're not going to stop the purposing. Of the infinite, right? Like they said up there in the religion papers. Okay. We're talking about the infinite made one. Nothing can stop it. Okay. I would think so. Right. Well, but what is the self-respect that you should have? It's self-respect. See? Not personality respect. It's self-respect. Have respect that you are a self that's so constructed that it has a selfhood. It has an inner thread of potential ongoingness, unlike mouse. Okay? You should have self-respect. You've been given this great gift, a divine gift of selfhood, of a self that has a potential seat for personality. Respect that. Seat. That personality is going to seat itself on what you should respect, yourself. That's what you have a whole control of, yourself. Show some respect for it. Recognize what it is. It's a great and divine gift from the mother. Mother has given you a selfhood. She only gave the mouse a self. Okay, but she gave you a selfhood. She gave you something that the father could engage, that you might have the opportunity to choose to be part of the eternal purposing. Okay. But you're not going to be forced. It's in your hands. If you don't want that opportunity, the father says, fine. And it doesn't even have to go to the father. The supreme mind says, that's fine. I can adapt to you not being here. I can adapt to any finite set of facts. You're not essential to the whole.
Plus, we needed a supreme adjuster where you used to
be. Yeah. And because you chose iniquity, somebody gets a supreme adjuster now. Lucky them. Unlucky you.
I kind of feel like what she said about you being flippant about that. That doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah, it doesn't sit right with a self. Selfs don't like to think that they're not the center of the universe.
Yeah.
No, but that's what I'm saying.
Saying that God has created a person, and that person is you.
God.
Now, if you don't reach it, it's not your selfhood may be gone, but that personality that was supposed to be you.
But again, so that's my whole point. The personality is not actually me. The selfhood is me. The purposing is his. Okay? Is love mine? No. I can't possess love. Love is never me. What does love do with me if it's genuine love? It flows through me. His personality flows through me. That is not mine. Okay. If I start thinking that the personality is mine, that's something called self-love. And that's the beginning of problems in the universe. If you think that you possess the personality, that you are the love, that's Lucifer's assumption. I am the love. Lucifer did, and so did all kinds of angels. Lots and lots of angels said, yeah, I think he's right. I'm the love. There isn't some source of love that flows through me, balderdash. Those angels said, I am the love. There is no father. I am the love. That's what they said. They agreed with Lucifer. They listened to Lucifer's argument and they said, you're right, Lucifer. That whole notion that there's some reservoir of love that I can't see, and it flows down through me to others, baloney. I'm love. I love you. No. The Father loves you through me. Is it humility or something else? You have to challenge this. This is common wisdom, quote unquote, in modern society. That what you should try to do is love yourself. That is the beginning of your destruction. And you never have one shred of ego about it. You are completely humble. You know that you can be replaced. That absolute personality can't be replaced, but what it manifests through can be replaced. You can be replaced. The self can be replaced. Okay? I am not indispensable. Okay? I have to be humble. I have to recognize that. I am expendable. I'm combustible. I mean, think about what happens when I fuse. If I fuse with my adjuster, I literally combust. That's how expendable I am. Poof!
When came into being, he had the idea of your personality. That I mean, he was going to let you try to get that personality, right?
He was going to, yeah.
So like the person that was one month old and dies.
Mm-hmm. That personality never got a chance to manifest.
But he had visions of what that little person
would in eternity. In eternity. I see, but only in eternity, not
that
time.
Person, I mean, that little individual will still be able to go and try to reach
that particular of course. Until that individual chooses of himself to not go on. The personality is changeless. Nothing changes it. No, my positive decisions, my negative decisions, nothing changes it. It's changeless. But the self is nothing but change. Okay? And the question is it changing to be more in line with that personality that is trying to identify with it or less in line with it? You know, that's all that's in play. I'm a selfhood. Think about, for instance, you know, another way to understand what goes on in this life. This, my adjutant mindal self doesn't go on. It's mortal. It dies. There's another self that's potentially ongoing. That Maranja self. Your soul. Okay? That's another self. Okay? And it's such a precisely constructed other self that the same selfhood that's threading through this adjutant mindal self threads through it. So the same personality that's now seated on this adjutant mindal self can, when I'm resurrected, be seated on that Maranja self, because the same selfhood flows through it. Or if that little child dies and they resurrect a material child in the probationary nursery, there's a lot of things that are different about that material body that they construct. And that material self that gets awakened. But they make sure that one essential thing is the same. They call it the potential identity. If it died at a very early age, you hadn't gotten up to the point of encirclement in the Holy Spirit and a literal selfhood that's threaded through this yet. But there's a potential identity. Because remember, you brought up that identity. See, the personality engages in actuality and makes it an identity because it's identified with that self. There's a potential identification in play with that little baby. Okay, they make sure that potential is exactly the same. They change a whole bunch of things. They build a new body. But that potential identity, which is going to blossom into a selfhood, it's going to be the exact same selfhood that would have come into existence before. It's different self, same selfhood. Just like my soul, different self, same selfhood. A whole bunch of things that I don't want to die, I have to face at some point are going to die because they can't be copied into a Maranja self.
Like what?
A whole bunch of mortal self things are just going to die. All the things that, you know, all that stuff that perforce serves two masters, all the things that this mortal self perforce, the instinct for you to, to bear and nurture children, you know, that's a material instinct. Yeah. That dies. You know, you don't wake up on the mansion worlds, hunting for a husband so that you can, start birthing babies again. You just don't have that instinct when you wake up there. Okay? That dies. All right. We're never going to get finished here. We better get back here. Luckily, it's a reasonably, and we kind of got through a lot of the heavy duty already. Let's see, where were we? We were, okay, okay.
Personalities may be similar, but they are never the same. Persons of a given series, type, order, or pattern may and do resemble one another, but they are never identical. Personality is that feature of an individual which we know. and which enables us to identify such a being at some future time, regardless of the nature and extent of changes in form, mind, or spirit status. Personality is that part of any individual which enables us to recognize and positively identify that person as the one we have previously known, no matter how much he may have changed because of the modification of the vehicle of expression and manifestation of his personality.
Right, see, so like you were saying, Janessi, you know, so you meet someone in the next life. The manifestation of his personality is radically different. Okay, so in other words, all the things that we now call personality are radically different. And so you know, on the surface, you'd say that's not the same personality. Okay. And it's, you know, probably only then that a lot of us will finally get any sort of definitive distinction between the self and the personality. Because upon careful experiential engagement with this self in the next life, in the midst of all these manifestations that you've never experienced anything remotely like before, you know, this Morancha being that's now manifesting in front of you, it's like, wait a minute, there's a very subtle something there. That's you, isn't it, Bob? Okay? Deep down, you know, it's like, wait a minute, there's something that hasn't changed. See, and it's actually a dual thing, like I was trying to point out, you know. The personality, yes, but see, there's also that selfhood. That's the same selfhood. Hence, it's the same personality identified. Notice they said you can positively identify. See, you're going to know it. You're going to recognize the same identification. And then you're going to think back. It's like, wow, when I knew Bob on Urantia, I mean, basically, I was clueless. I mean, really, everything that I was sort of aware of was not his personality. But I can, in retrospect now, I see how there was something that I really didn't notice consciously that I'm seeing again. That's that personality selfhood dual pair.
In reading recently about the Jesus ascension,
mm-hmm.
and when people encountered him,
right.
At first, you know, because of his Morancha form, they wouldn't recognize him.
Yeah.
But when he spoke, they say Mary Magdalene recognized his voice, but they recognized his personality.
Right. See, and again, see, we're just thinking a little bit more detail. They recognized is the same selfhood and same personality engaged to that selfhood. It's that same manifest stability that he had before. And it's a subtle little thing that's at the core. You know, look away from all of the really, you know, coarse aspects of an individual. There's a subtlety deep in that your insight, remember we're reading about the cosmic insights here, and that ability to discriminate, the ability to penetrate to the subtle stuff. If you use your three cosmic intuitions, you can penetrate, you can have the insight to see in through all of the self, to the selfhood and the personality identified with it. You know, the direct manifestation of that personality is through that core of the self, the selfhood. And that manifestation doesn't change. But around the selfhood, the self, that, you know, expression and manifestation of his personality, that, I mean, that is going to be radically different. You know, when you see me in the next life, I'm going to come off immediately radically different than I do now. Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out, well, what is the us that's doing the recognizing? Is it myself that's recognizing another's personality?
See, no. Again, see, it's you're really getting to the selfhood engagement. You're really starting to recognize what part of you has a relation to the whole. And is connected to another through the individuality of the whole. See, it's that personality selfhood pair that's really encircled through the mother. That's what I'm saying. You begin to finally discover the real core you. And it's like, oh, this is the real me. And then I've got all this scaffolding, Morancha scaffolding now, where I had material scaffolding before. And between here and becoming a first stage spirit, I'm going to work on sloughing off all of this scaffolding and try to pare it all down to really just a selfhood, from our perspective now, that is infused into the adjuster. You know, and all of this other selfness, you know, goes away. You know, you leave the local universe without this, you know, this real other self that like we have now. You have it all infused into the adjuster when you leave.
You got this no in italics. That's
mm-hmm. Yeah, instead of no about.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. By and large, you know, I'm knowing about all of you because I don't have enough clarity yet to really discern, distinguish your selfhood personality from yourself. But I won't really appreciate that, like I said, until the next life. It's like, oh, there was a little part that I unconsciously knew instead of just knew about.
They could survive.
And I still know it.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was godlike and so it could survive. All the stuff about me that's not godlike is going to die.
Creature personality is distinguished by two self-manifesting and characteristic phenomenon of mortal reactive behavior, self-consciousness and associated relative free will.
So just one little thing up front. They're going to take those one at a time. They're going to flesh out the self-consciousness in the next paragraph. And then in the list that follows, they're going to work on the free will part. Okay, so that's why this is kind of this little heading, you know, paragraph. And just notice one little key thing in there. To self-manifesting. Like I was saying earlier on, in responding to Pam there. I don't choose. The Father chooses me. From my perspective, I don't choose self-consciousness. It self-manifests. Because the Father chose me, boom, one day I have self-consciousness without choosing it. Okay? Because I was chosen. Well, we're all chosen people. Every personality in the universe is a chosen one, chosen by the Father to be personalized. Okay? And He chooses to personalize everything that is personalizable. The only thing that He doesn't choose to personalize is that which is not personalizable. Okay? Like Paradise Trinity is not personalizable. So the relationship there is not so much this personal choice thing. It's below that God person level. It's the deity. Remember, that's, you know, in order to talk about the Paradise Trinity and the relationship between the Father and the Paradise Trinity, you got to drop down to the more fundamental thing, deity. You can't talk about personality because the Trinity is not a person. Yeah. It's not God the Father that engages the Paradise Trinity. It's the Father. It's the deity that engages the Paradise Trinity. All right, so let's do self-consciousness first.
Self-consciousness consists in intellectual awareness of personality actuality. It includes the ability to recognize the reality of other personalities. It indicates capacity for individualized experience in and with cosmic realities, equivalating to the attainment of identity status in the personality relationships of the universe. Self-consciousness connotes recognition of the actuality of mind ministration and the realization of relative independence of creative and determinative free will.
Okay, so just directly, you know, what you had when they introduced it in the previous paragraph, and they just said self-consciousness. Okay, just literally what that means. I suddenly become conscious of my adjutant self. I have this material mindal adjutant self, and I become aware of its existence. Okay. So that's just the, you know, the direct fact of self-consciousness, consciousness of your mortal self. Well, obviously, if I'm going to be conscious of that mortal self, there I must have some separated place from which I'm observing it. There must, you know, and basically, it's I'm observing the lower domain of the hourglass from the upper domain of the hourglass. My personalized self, my, you know, it's kind of my selfhood, becomes conscious of my, just my mere self. The greater self becomes conscious of the lesser self. Okay, so there's that. And immediately associated with that, says self-consciousness consists in intellectual awareness of personality actuality. That's what I was just doing. See, the moment you think about it logically, wait a minute, I'm conscious of myself. Well, that must mean that I have an actuality over here from which I'm observing that self. And that's, you know, that personalized self, that personality actuality. And you notice even actualities, the selfhood, see, okay? You know, you become aware that there is this higher intellectuality, this selfhood, okay? Yeah, so, so you have this mutual recognition here, you know, and it's like, oh, I'm an hourglass, okay, and I've got these two domains, I get it. And I'm not just a lower domain and some magical, you know, other, I'm an upper domain and I'm a lower domain, and okay, and then it includes the ability to recognize the reality of other personalities. So that's the next corollary. Now, if you can recognize your personality actuality, you can recognize the personality actuality of someone else. Reflect on that logically. Turn it around a little bit. So all the people on the planet that are convinced that there's no difference between them and any other animal, have they experienced self-consciousness? Because it consists in the intellectual awareness of personality actuality. No, they do not know themselves as a person. And that's why they think there's no difference between them and an animal. They don't recognize themselves as a person yet. Their consciousness is purely lower domain of the hourglass, the animal part. Okay? That's a very telling thing when someone says that they're absolutely convinced that there's no difference between them, you know, and a horse or a prairie dog or whatever. Okay? They're testifying to their lack of personality consciousness, of self-consciousness. They don't even know themselves as a person yet. So no wonder they don't know someone else as a person. Now, if I know myself as a person, when I look at a mouse, I don't see that. I see something like the lower domains of my lower hourglass, you know, lower half of my hourglass. I know what that is. That's a adjutant self. Yeah. When I look at Chris, I know that's not just an adjutant self. there's a person, no matter how faint flicker it might be. Okay? Okay.
When I read this, I think of my experience I had when I won't go into detail, but when I couldn't keep up with my thoughts, and I was just left with this sense of being and the ongoingness of being. I was having a pure experience of this. Was I? Is that what being is about?
Right. If you just get in that meditative state up in the upper domain of the hourglass where you're just present there and you have no sense of dynamicness or anything, you just are there. Right. See, that's that sense of being.
And I had this sense of ongoingness of that being, that it just survives. It had an absolute quality.
See, right. You see, you are not
beyond all these thoughts that just come and go.
Right.
There was this background of being.
Right. See, and that's see, and like I was saying, what you're recognizing there, you know, experiencing this on. See, that's your selfhood. See, that's you. Okay. That's what. You recognize, wait a minute, I have the whole pile of monkeys thing, that's my normal me, and then, but I've got this still ongoing, calm, quiet centered me right. and my selfhood, the core of you. So, you know, you guys all noticed, you know, it indicates capacity. Of course, that's the, you know, that's the real significant thing that comes in addition to this insert with his encirclement in the Holy Spirit, this selfhood, this thread of supremacy. There's also a capacity associated with that because the mother gives you capacity. So you now have this place. She makes place within you. She's place. Where you can have these experiences, like, wait a minute, you know, I just experienced something like John was describing. You know, where did that happen? That happened in the capacity that she created. It didn't happen down in your adjutant mind. It happened in this other place, a place that is called capacity because it's a bestowal of an expression coming down from a facet of deity, the infinite capacity. Just like the adjuster comes down from the infinite upholder. That's coming down from the infinite capacity. You know, and equivalating to the attainment of identity status and the personality relationships of the one turning of the universe. I remember that's what I said. That's what you really discover. It's this selfhood that's related to the whole and through the individuality of the whole to other selfhoods. Other personalized selves. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. So and then they're transitioning. Okay. So and then you also have this free will. You have this relative free will and its creativity and its self determination. All right. So let's read a little bit about that free will. Okay.
It was interesting, a section on NPR today about the scientists who are studying animals and trying to figure out what kind of human characteristics they have and trying to understand, you know, that they seem to have care and sympathy, you know, the elephants, the orangutans.
Right,
of course they do.
And yeah. If they, and I was thinking how helpful it is to have been given the information about the adjutant mind spirits, mm-hmm. you know, that the animals can reach a certain level, yeah. but...
Right, and so, you know, you know about the adjutant mind ministry, that it's a ministry. Whose ministry? Yeah. Right. So when you see an animal expressing something that, I think I'd have to describe that as care. Mm-hmm. Who are you seeing? Mm-hmm. Seth's created mother. She cares. Mm-hmm. See, again, I mean, if you see purposing through me, it's his purposing. If you see caring through me, it's her caring. Okay? And I'm not the source of anything. I'm not the source of anything. Okay? I'm only a conduit for deity. The glory of deity. The glory of the mother to come through me. The glory of the father to come through me. Or I can slam the door shut. Okay, it's my choice. I have control over the blinds. All right, a little bit about relative free will.
The relative free will, which characterizes the self-consciousness of human personality, is involved in 1, moral decision, highest wisdom. 2, spiritual choice, truth discernment. 3, unselfish love, brotherhood service. 4, purposeful cooperation, group loyalty. 5, cosmic insight, the grasp of universe meanings. 6, personality dedication, wholehearted devotion to doing the Father's will. 7, the sincere pursuit of divine values and the wholehearted love of the divine value giver.
7, worship, the sincere pursuit. All right, now, there's in that list, you know. So this is interesting. With self-consciousness, they gave you a paragraph. With the free will, they gave you a list. why do they give you this list? Fundamentally, because the personality, and you know, it's free will creativity. What creativity does it have? It's seeking unity. It's trying, and more precisely, it's seeking triunity. It's trying to take all the parts and put them together into a whole. So you have lots of parts, like bullet points in a list, coming together into a whole. That's why they did it that way. Okay, just to remind you that you have 7 different adjutant parts, and you have 3 cosmic intuition parts, and you have parts and parts and parts. And you got all these different aspects of you that the personality is going to try to bring together in a whole. And, you know, if you focus on any bullet point here, okay, well, 1, moral decision, highest wisdom. You have the moral discrimination on the 5th level of meaning with your 2nd cosmic intuition. Okay, which is directly in and of itself going to be associated with moral choice. Okay, but if I make a moral choice, I'm going to direct that down through the self. I'm going to try to manifest that. As it reaches down, it engages the top of the adjutants, the spirit of wisdom, lifts it up to even higher expression, and that choice, spiritual choice, becomes mindful decision. See, so they're putting them together in a pair. You have moral choice coming down, engaging mind, and becoming mindful decision, you know, as highest wisdom. Okay. So there's a couple parts working together as a whole. And they just do that all over in here. You can just take the next one as another example. Spiritual choice. Okay. If you go up to the spiritual level, the 6th level of meaning with the spiritual insights, is just in and of itself, you could have spiritual choice. But, I've gotten all the way up to the top now, up to the 6th level of meaning. I've worked up through all 3, cosmic intuitions. I have a wholehearted, you know, I'm slowly moving up the floors in my capacity, in the upper domain of the hourglass. I get up to the penthouse. I now can wrap around the whole, have a wholehearted phenomenon, a real directly personal thing. And, you know, I have the 3 cosmic intuitions here, and the 3-fold actuality. And then I have something down here in this personality block that's in that same, you know, field number 4, I put the spirit of truth in there. They're talking about when you begin to have that holistic triunity phenomenon, you can begin to engage truth. And post-Pentecost, there's even a ministry now that tries to foster that state. But if you haven't gotten up to the 6th level of meaning and then, you know, grab the 3 levels as a whole, you know, there's nothing for the spirit of truth to foster. So it sits there and twiddles its thumbs. Okay. So see, those sorts of things. See, they're just playing with, you can even see in 6 and 7, reinforcing that wholehearted, so they repeat that. You know, you might have had devotion in 6 there. You might have had devotion with your 6th adjutant, but personality brings it into the whole. And seeing you have this transcendent devotion, you have this wholehearted devotion, not just this, you know, zealous little, you know, laser beam, the 6th adjutant. See, all of them like that. They want you to reflect on how some of the parts can work together. You know, the energy of loyalty, the 3rd adjutant in 4 there, you know, can take on this whole new, purposeful cooperation. You know, you bring it into this, you know, much bigger domain of functioning than just loyalty, in and of yourself and probably only to yourself. Go out to the group, you know. So all of those, that's what the purpose of that is. It's bullet points of the parts and how the parts, different ways some of the parts are working together. So that recognizing that that's fundamentally this free will that you have, the free will that you've been given is to seek unity. You're free to seek a consecration of mind to the universal harmony, which is upheld by the universal harmony. the upholder, and is ongoing. Okay, that's why you have free will. You're going to consecrate that will to the perfect will of God the Father because you recognize it's His will. After all, not yours. That's why you should consecrate it. And it's like, well, okay, now I humbly recognize it's His will. What's His will? His will is that you're ongoing. It's like, well, how do I make myself ongoing? Well, you consecrate yourself to establishing a triunity, this full, wholehearted character where all the parts come together into a harmony. And that's an ongoing phenomenon. That harmony goes on. Anything short of wholeheartedness and the harmony that resonates with that whole heart doesn't go on.
My question is, that I had even earlier, but this is a perfect time for it, I think, is what is exercising the will? I think it's from what you said, and also, too, when I read the seven functional levels of total deity, will is level two, personality is level three. So the will is that the selfhood?
Wait.
It's exercising the will.
Level two and three, what are you talking about? What level
will
two?
Will comes before, on page two, will comes before personality.
Oh, yeah, I mean, right.
So something's exercising
will. Well, okay, remember, okay, so will is, you have will, volition, choice.
Yeah.
The sequence. Volition is the exercise of will. And, but that question of, well, what's exercising the will? Will is self-exercising. Remember how, to self-manifesting. See, that's the thing.
Self-willed.
Right. See, it's self-willed and self-personalized. Mm-hmm. Okay. You're being given a relationship to that self-willed, self-personalized two and three self.
It's the selfhood that's exercising the will. It comes from the self.
No. I mean, see, within the personality is that potential for volition. It's the exercises itself. The only thing that you have to recognize is that the manifestation of that volition doesn't come directly from the personality. It can't manifest directly. It has to go through a selfhood into a self and somehow out, because in and of itself it's existential. Okay, see, so it doesn't manifest as an experiential phenomenon. Okay, but it is, it is will. It isn't willed by something. So it exercises itself, and that dynamism of going sort of from potential to actual, going from will to volition, sets the selfhood in motion because it's identified with that. So it has this sort of transcendent, invisible motion that becomes manifest because it's identified, if that helps. Okay? Let's get some more. There's a lot of things that are hard to... We're going to run out of time here. Okay.
The Urantia type of human personality may be viewed as functioning in a physical mechanism consisting of the planetary modification of the Nebadon type of organism belonging to the electrochemical order of life activation and endowed with the Nebadon order of the Orvantan series of the cosmic mind of parental reproductive pattern.
That's all.
The bestowal of the divine gift of personality upon such a mind-endowed mortal mechanism confers the dignity of cosmic citizenship and enables such a mortal creature forthwith to become reactive to the constitutive recognition of the three basic mind realities of the cosmos. One, the mathematical or logical recognition of the uniformity of physical causation. Two, the reasoned recognition of the obligation of moral conduct. And three, the faith grasp of the fellowship worship of deity associated with the loving service of humanity.
Okay, so step down through it. So it starts out with that very wordy, all that detail. Like Chris was saying, you had all these parts that come together. That's, you know, back at the very first paragraph, you have this, you know, the Universal Father bestows personality on numerous orders of beings as they function on diverse levels of universe actuality. They're laying out the specifics of how you are fit into that diversity. There's lots of diversity because there's big holes and smaller holes, you know, WHOLE, it's all broken up into all kinds of parts. Okay. So you have Nebadon and Orvanton and Aeon, et cetera, all this stuff. And there's life animation and there's mind and, you know, all this complexity, all these different flavors of all these different things. Okay. And the personality is going to try to engage all that. Okay. But this is very important. After they give you that whole eye-glazing sort of address of you in the mindful cosmos, they say that when the personality engages that complexity, it confers the dignity. Remember that self-respect? Not self-love, but self-respect that we were talking about? There's a dignity. It confers the dignity of what? Cosmic citizenship. Okay. Remember how I said this is the core, the fifth epical revelation? Fourth epical revelation reveals that you're a son of the spiritual father, that you're a child of God. Fifth epical revelation reveals that you're a cosmic citizen. This is the first time that this has been stated in the book. Where is it stated? The core. Okay. That's the fifth epical revelation. That it's revealed to us that we've had conferred upon us the dignity of cosmic citizenship, not just a child of God. This is the fifth epical revelation. Okay, and the moment that you have that dignity, you have a threefold potential. There's the three cosmic intuitions. Okay? And remember how back when we were reading last week, we saw moral discrimination and spiritual insight directly, the labels we use for intuitions 2 and 3. We didn't quite see logical acumen. We saw what? Do you remember how they worded that? Material acumen. Okay, here, see the mathematical or logical recognition. See, what I've done is I've combined those two, like I said, so that you use the more philosophic, the more generalized adjective, logical, to challenge you to think about that intuition. Okay, that's... Right. So, so that whole, to reveal that this whole dignity is that you're a cosmic citizen and that you're enabled to forthwith become reactive to the constituent recognition of the three basic mind realities of the cosmos. That's the core of the revelation. That's what they're trying to reveal in this. That you're not just a singular monolithic I am-ness sort of thing. You're plugged into this dynamic cosmos. Okay, and then read the last one there.
The full function of such a personality endowment is the beginning realization of deity kinship. Such a selfhood, indwelt by a prepersonal fragment of God, the Father, is in truth and in fact a spiritual son of God. Such a creature not only discloses capacity for the reception of the gift of the divine presence, but also exhibits reactive response to the personality gravity circuit of the Paradise Father of all personalities.
Okay, so just a couple things I want to stress there. I think you can see some of that directly, but the full function of such a personality endowment, if you can actually get into this more wholehearted state, get some full functioning going, the full function of such a personality endowment is the beginning realization of deity kinship. See? Ooh, deity kinship. See? And such a selfhood, see? That selfhood and its relationship to deity. So going to the more fundamental nature of yourself than just your personality relationship to God. But underlying that is the relationship between the selfhood and the deity. Remember in paper 118 when we created this little, and I created this little handout, and we discovered there was that amazing paragraph in there about the relationship between personal selfhood and deity? That's what they're referring to here. Another one of those really complex things. They laid out 9 different things about how you have this 9-fold kinship with deity. It's one that you have this singular 1-fold relationship of personality to the Father. But you drop down to deity and it's like, wow, the dignity, the majesty of what God has wrought in me. I am this amazing selfhood. All of this complexity that's perfectly synchronized with all these different facets of deity. Okay. Yeah. To get to that point where you have this personal selfhood and deity relationship that you're beginning to contemplate and appreciate. That's where true self-respect, self-respect. That's a self that's worth respecting. That has that much kinship with deity. That's that profound. Okay? Only the 5th epical revelation remotely approaches such a recognition. And see, that such a selfhood, the other part of it is that capacity. It actually has a capacity. It allows there to be a space for an adjuster. Again, to think about that capacity aspect of your selfhood. It not only has all this kinship with deity, but it has this literalness of capacity that literally provides a space for the adjuster to be a greater selfhood so the adjuster isn't so claustrophobic, crammed into your tiny little embryonic by grace alone selfhood, that initial thread of encirclement in the Holy Spirit, the selfhood that you didn't have to choose. You know, the Father stuffs it into that tiny little thimble. Okay, remember how they talk about it being imprisoned? I mean, it's the smallest space that you can squeeze an adjuster into. It has, you know, no breathing room at all. Take delight in cultivating. You know, a relationship with the capacity so that the adjuster can breathe. But also exhibits reactive response to the personality gravity circuit of the Paradise Father of all personalities. You'll discover an amazing thing. When you have this greater capacity, it boosts the other side of the equation too. Like I was saying, I mean, the personality, is it self-identifying? No. It has to identify with something. If you want a greater relationship with the Father, choose to have a greater relationship with the Mother so the Father can have a greater relationship with you. You can't just wish it into existence. It has to identify with something. If you have nothing to identify with, you're not going to have much of a relationship with the Father, no matter how much you want it. It's not magical. There has to be her and him together as one. So that's the point of what they're getting at there. Okay. Well, that was a wholehearted examination of section 8. All right. The third section you'll see, is a little bit more straightforward, and we'll probably actually roll into the next paper next time, you know, unless we get off on a tangent. we're about to be reminded that we're in a pair of papers that are about the Supreme Spirits. we're going to get a lot more about that not father stuff that we're kind of alluding to here, you know, as we get into the next paper. All right, let's take a moment to reflect on it here.